Hey, welcome to the program. It is that week. And I would like to say it's that week because it's Thanksgiving. But it's also an extra treat there on the dining room table because it's Alabama and Auburn. This Saturday at Jordan-Hare Stadium, 2:30 CBS kickoff. That'll be a real treat. Lars, I know that you and I get very, very jacked up when it comes to Thanksgiving. It's our favorite holiday. First of all, we'll talk about that all week long and our favorite sides and dishes and how we like our turkey. But first of all, let's just recap your weekend. How did it go?
It was the game, right? Yeah, it was an amazing experience with my kids. And I want to hear about your experience as well with going with the Bama broker, Laura Lee Thompson, and her husband. And I want to get your full game day experience. I know we've got Nick Saban coming to the podium here any second. But we decided to, and Noah, just give us a notification when he's up and ready. But sort of last second, my kids at first, I thought we were going to go. And then Robbie, our friend, was kind enough to give me his tickets. And then, sorry, I just got distracted here. And then my kids said, no, we don't want to go. And they were adamant about it.
What?
So gave the tickets back to Robbie. And then Saturday morning, oh, Daddy, we got to go. We got to go. So get on SeatGeek and purchase some tickets in the north end zone. Just about, it was great, like 20 rows up. Didn't realize that the sun was going to be beating down on us, and it felt about 110 degrees. But I love these games, which a lot of fans don't, because it's obviously going to be a blowout. But it's a great opportunity to take your kids because the traffic's not quite as bad, and just the intensity level isn't quite as high. For small children, the noise is, it can be an issue, right? Because they are very sensitive ears. So anyway, ended up going and we had a great time. Other than the line to get popcorn and Cokes, as we're in line, Matt, a fight broke out between two of the workers. One guy was a yellow jacket worker, and another guy was a red jacket worker at the stadium. And it apparently one guy said something to the other, and one dude pushed the yellow jacket guy into Lincoln.
Here he comes.
Yep, let's we'll get to the end of the story later.
Well, final thoughts on the Chattanooga game basically is, we took our opponent seriously and came out and got the result that we wanted. We started fast in the game, executed well. Still lots of things to learn and improve on. Obviously, the Iron Bowl is, one of the great rivalry games in college football. Something that you look forward to as a competitor. It's also something that is a great opportunity to be able to play in. And I don't think that anybody needs to pay attention to what happened in the past, what happened in the last game, what somebody's record is. Anytime you play in a rivalry game, it's going to be a highly competitive, tough, very physical game, and that's what everybody needs to get ready for. I think, Auburn is, Hugh Freeze has done a fantastic job there, with his team this year. They've played very competitively in all their games. They've, they're 6-5. They've won some games really well, but they do a great job of running the football. I think that they've got a very difficult offense to prepare for with the multiples that they give you, the different ways that they run the ball, the way the quarterbacks, both quarterbacks really can, add to the running game. The tight end, number 13 is a really good player, really good receiver. Number 5 is a really good receiver. Defensively, they played really well all year long. They got some good players, got some edge rushers, they got some people that can create some problems for you, as well as they're very good on special teams. They're very aggressive in terms of what they do on special teams. They've got really good specialists. The kicker and the punter both are, leaders in the SEC. So This is a challenging game for us, and I think our guys need to have the right mindset of what it's going to take to be successful in a game like this, especially playing on the road.
Start here with Nick.
Yeah, how would you assess the way your offensive line has played in recent weeks?
We're playing better. I think we've made steady improvement. I think the improvement has come from better communication and, you know, better, you know, technical execution from a technique standpoint, hand placement, foot placement, that kind of stuff. Second step on the ground, I think all those things have helped. I think pass protection has improved, but that's something that we need to continue to improve on.
How well do you think Jalen Milroe has protected himself as a runner this season?
As a what?
As a runner, protected himself as a runner.
Well, I think, you know, Jalen is obviously someone that has great capabilities as a runner. I think he's been pretty effective in his choices of when to step up in the pocket, when to run, when he has an opportunity to make a play, when he doesn't. But I think the thing he's developed is the ability to keep his eyes downfield and make plays in the passing game, even when the pocket breaks down. And I think he's been an effective runner for us, when we've had perimeter plays that involve reads on his part to get to the perimeter. So, and I think both those things help us overall offensively in terms of what the defense has to defend.
Charlie.
Hey, Coach. Just what kind of progress have you seen from Terrion Arnold over the course of the season?
Yeah, Terrion has really done a good job for us. Because of injuries, he's had to play multiple positions, which has been challenging for him. He's had to play some star at times, which in some cases when guys went out of the game, he didn't have a lot of reps at it. But he's been a trooper at, you know, doing it and, trying to look at it as a challenge and go out and, you know, improve each week. His coverage ability has been very good, and I think he's played extremely well.
Good afternoon, Coach. I know during fall camp, building up depth along the defensive line was a priority. After 11 weeks, how has that group grown and evolved?
Yeah, I think we've had some young guys that have really, you know, come along and shown some improvement. Some of them played, you know, toward the end of, you know, last game. So I feel good about the progress that we made in that group. And, I just think that, you know, our ability to stop the run is going to be critical in this game. And for us to play physical on the line of scrimmage and play really good technique with whoever's playing is going to be the most important thing that we need to do in preparation for this game.
Coach, when Hugh Freeze got introduced as the Auburn head coach, one of the first things he mentioned was the relationship with you. He said when he left Ole Miss, you and Miss Terry were really there for him during even time when he wasn't coaching. What is that relationship like for the fans? I know this is a big rivalry, but you guys have a special relationship, the two of you.
Look, I play against all kind of guys and all kind of coaches that coach for me, that I'm good friends with, whether it was Belichick, when we were together, and then all of a sudden I'm at Miami and he's at New England. All the guys in college coaching that you have to play against. You know, I've always been a guy that has a lot of respect for coaches and what we do to try to promote our game and how we try to impact young people as players. So I don't think you have to really – I think you can have a relationship with somebody and still compete like crazy when you play against each other, but it's really not personal. The outcome of the game is really not personal. You're doing the best you can to get your team to play the best, and I respect that as a coach. And, you know, we're going to do the best we can to get our team to play their best as a coach, and hopefully, you know, people respect that. So, but at the end of the day, does it have to affect your relationship? I don't think so. I don't think you have to dislike somebody or have an adversarial relationship with somebody to actually compete against them.
You're left awesome.
Yeah, regardless of record, it seems like it's always a really competitive game when you guys go to Jordan-Hare Stadium. What do you think makes that place such a difficult place to win?
Well, I think it's, if we're going to have success there, we're going to have to execute. Anytime you play on the road in this league, it's a difficult place to play. This is no different. People talk about all the crazy stuff that happens in this game. But since I've been here, the team that should have won the game based on who played the best. So I think the focus needs to be on, you know, how are we going to play and how are we going to execute and do what we do and what kind of consistency are we going to be able to maintain in a difficult environment, which, you know, we've had this challenge several times before, and this one's going to be just as difficult as any of the rest.
Chase? I've heard your good friend Bill Belichick say that the concept of halftime adjustments is really overrated because adjustments get made during the first half because there's no sense in waiting. You can get hurt by that. So with that in mind, how effective is this coaching staff at staying on top of adjustments during the first half so that when you get into the half, the time is more about message, motivation, or whatever else?
No, I think it's a combination of both. You know, I love Bill, don't get me wrong, but I don't always agree with him. I didn't always agree with him when I worked with him before him. But anyway, and I'm sure he'll say he didn't always agree with me. But anyway, you know, we're making adjustments between every series. I mean, we're going over the previous series, whether it's offense, defense, or whatever. They ran this stunt, we didn't block it right. Or, you know, they ran this formation, we didn't adjust to it correctly. But we also draw those things up as the game progresses so we can actually show the players those plays and some of the things that they did as maybe you've already covered it, maybe you didn't have a chance to cover it, but we kind of do both. And then if there's something different that we want to do, sometimes you don't like to do it until you can get everybody in front of you and you can explain a little better than you can on the sidelines. So there are occasions where you want to make adjustments to things when everybody can see it, because it doesn't just affect one group. You know, sometimes, okay, we're going to change how we play this. That may affect the outside backers and the inside backers as well. So I think both things are really, really important, and I think both things actually occur during a game.
Tommy Reese was named a semifinalist today for the Broyles Awards. What can you say about what he's done to grow in his role this year?
Well, obviously we nominated him, so we thought he's done a pretty good job, and I think he's done a great job of transforming our offense and the players and how they've improved. And I think that's made a huge difference in the confidence on our team offensively as well as our team in general. So I think he's done an outstanding job.
Go to Matt.
Can a team taking a loss like Auburn did on Saturday sort of galvanize them, make them more dangerous this week?
I can't answer that. You know, I just can't answer that. I think you'd be better served to ask them, you know, that question. But, you know, I think everybody pays attention when things don't go well and they want to get it right. And I have enough respect, and we have enough respect, that they'll probably do the same.
Finish up here with Kurt.
Coach, I know how you prepare, you do the same thing every week and respect all of your opponents, but I wonder if any time in your career you've ever taken some time from preparation for one game in anticipation of another, and if so, how that came out.
No, I never. In college football, I've never done that. In pro football, you know, sometimes you do a little bit of work on the next team only because it's really, really difficult. That's not something that works well for me because, you know, I'm sort of geared in on what you have to do in that particular game, and I don't like to commingle different things before that game is over. But I will admit, in pro ball, not because of a particular opponent, it was just the best use of your time, right, to be able to, you know, you didn't practice very long on Friday with the players, walk through on Saturday, so you had quite a bit more time before you ever played a game, and you weren't with the players all the time. You know, we're with the players here a significant amount of time. You know, like Thursday we practice, Friday we have walkthrough, Friday we have meetings, we eat with them, we have meetings Friday night, so you don't have all those things, you know, in pro ball. So, you know, sometimes there's a little time to try to get ahead, but it was not something that ever worked very well for me.
All right, Coach, thank you.
All right, thank you.
And that was Nick Saban. Let's go to break.
Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon, clouds increasing, the high 71. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms moving in. There could be a few strong storms around, the low 59. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy with rain ending during the morning, the high at 68. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 70 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
It is Big Noon Sports. Appreciate everyone dialing us in, and I know we'll probably have higher listenership throughout the week because of the week. It's Alabama at Auburn, big time. I didn't expect, in fact, I thought exactly what Alabama put on the field against UTC was what I expected. I hoped, and it did. It happened. Boom, 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 just like that. Of course, there were a couple of mistakes, but, you know, when you win 66-10, it's hard to gripe about anything. It is the exact 180 for Auburn. New Mexico State came in a 21-point dog. They beat Auburn by 21. Lars, a quick analysis on what many are saying is the worst loss in Auburn football history.
I think it's a classic case of looking ahead to Alabama. Like New Mexico State, they had lost their first 27 meetings against SEC teams. I was so confident that Auburn, coming off of that really nice performance the week before, was going to just absolutely throttle New Mexico State. I was so confident that I put my money where my mouth is. And not only did they not cover, I got the line out was 25.5, and they end up losing by 21. It was a staggeringly poor performance, but, and we'll get into this, does this make Auburn a more dangerous team against Alabama coming off of this horrendous performance?
My initial answer to that is probably not. But it was very hard to figure out, and I listened quickly to the postgame comments by Hugh Freeze, and he was literally without words. His postgame interview took, and his news conference took 5 minutes. He didn't have anything to say. Today, it was a totally different story, and we took the liberty of going to the Auburn Network and getting the Hugh Freeze news conference. He talks about New Mexico State, the Aggies, and how they whooped up on the Tigers, but he also talks, more importantly, about the upcoming game with Alabama. You will hear that on the other side of this break as you listen to Big Noon Sports with Matt and Lars.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
The game of football. This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
About as disappointing as I've ever been in coaching with Saturday's effort. And it's it was an embarrassment to, and it's just as it can't happen like that. And it starts with me. I have to get our coaches and our players ready to play, and I obviously miss the mark tremendously. And it's frustrating and sickening to watch. And I certainly get, I mean, Jerry Kill's crew did exactly what they needed to do to win the game, and give them credit. They're a really good football team. But we did not respond in any way. And that is very frustrating. And so I'm ticked off. I hope they're ticked off. I haven't seen them yet. But we've got to learn from that for sure. But very disappointing. You know, one of the things I think is the greatest challenge we have probably now in these college football rooms, team rooms, staffings, is true connection. Just to where, man, I'm really playing for you, and I'm really playing for the school. And and when we have that true connection and relationship, you can really hold each other accountable. And that's something I've got to work on to for us to feel more connected. For when you get hit in the face like you did Saturday. And now we quickly got to turn the page and put that behind us for sure, because we all know what the Iron Bowl means to so many. And you can fix your feelings a whole heck of a lot with a good performance in that game. And so we've got to have a balancing act today when I get with the team on owning mine and everyone who had a responsibility in the way we played Saturday. We've got to own that, but we've got to move forward pretty quick for sure to get ready for what I think is the best team I've seen on film at the point at which we're playing them. I think they're playing at an extremely high level. So, man, what a rivalry to be a part of. We're going to try to educate our young men as best we can with the use of former players and the history of this great game. And hopefully they have a clear understanding of what it means to so many people.
What's your jam from
Yeah, you know your team better than anybody. Is this team capable of coming back from an embarrassing loss like that and playing their best game? Which is what's been taken
out now. Yeah, I don't know yet. Sure hope so. That's part of, you play this game or coach this game long enough, you're going to have some of those, and how you respond to it will determine a lot about you as a team and as a person. And I wish I had a better pulse for that, but I haven't seen them yet. And met with the culture council this morning. I like their response. You know, that's going to be a good test for all of us to see how we respond.
Jason,
front row. How tough is it this week to not get so amped up so early when you're emotional coming off a game like that? You're like I said, a little angry. To make sure that you're not playing the game Thursday instead of kind of ramping back up.
Yeah, I hadn't given that a lot of thought because I'm so ticked off at the way we played. I think the biggest temptation you have right now is trying to make sure you don't overdo the game plan and try to do too much because, you know, of you think you got to do this to have a chance to win against, you know, one of the elite teams in the country. But so I think you got to guard against that for sure. The over amped up I haven't sensed because most everybody I've seen, it's like they're in a fog from what happened Saturday, and we've got to snap out of that fast. And so I need to see a little amped up come practice today and tomorrow.
Stand in front.
You guys on the offensive line and on the defensive line too, you played so well
think was the biggest reason for that, especially on the front after coming off such a good dominant performance in the trenches, you know, last week?
Yeah, a lesson in humility, for sure. But I will say, you know, offensively, I think we could have run the ball. We never had the chance, truthfully. And that's not an excuse. We had 42 true offensive plays, and as the game went on, it was obvious that they were controlling the clock very well. And you've got to press a little bit. And whenever we did get on schedule, we shot ourselves in the foot with a penalty. So I'm not sure how effective we could have been running the ball or not, truthfully. It was just that type of game. But the most discouraging thing is our inability to get off the field and to stop their explosive plays defensively. And so it was, but as good as we were, offensive line, defensive line, special teams at Arkansas, we were equally as bad in all three Saturday.
This week, you talk about kind of turning the page, getting out of that fog with Alabama this week, Thanksgiving's this week too. With all these things going on, all kind of other ones, how do you try to attempt to stay focused on any one thing?
Well, my lesson that I'm teaching today is about focus, and we'll see if they respond. I mean, they get a choice. Everybody has a choice of how you respond to whatever you're dealing with, and we'll all have that choice this week. But you sure would hope that if they got any type of competitive spirit in them as an individual, they're going to shake off the cobwebs and get ready for this war that they're getting ready to go into, and it will be that. Yeah, I was nervous, anxious about, you know, how we would handle the success of three straight and becoming bowl eligible and check that box. And now you got Alabama next. And sometimes I can talk myself into believing things, and so you have to kind of balance that. But I told my wife Saturday morning, I'm really concerned about are we really ready to understand you have to earn the right to win a game? And so I was concerned, but it's my job to have them ready, and it's our coaches' jobs. We as a staff this morning had a lot of heart-to-hearts, and obviously we failed in getting that message across to our young men.
Talk about the task of defending Jalen Milroe, who is so dangerous with his legs as well as with his arm.
Yeah, it's, you know, we did not fare well against a kid similar to him down in LSU, and now he's playing at a very high level with good receivers and good running backs. It's a very difficult task for sure. I don't know that you completely do that. You got to hope that you do limit those explosive plays somewhat, but stopping him is no one's really done that. So we've got to mix up the coverages, mix up the plan, figure out if we can get pressure to him or not. Do we need a spy? I mean, you've got all those things going through our heads right now, and how much can our kids handle and do really, really well against all the different sets you might see? You know, I was trying my best. I don't think that I saw it live, or I believe I would remember that vividly. So we must have been either on a playing at the same time or on a flight back or something. I can't remember. But I do remember once I first saw it and found out, I couldn't wait to call Gus and say, man, you got to explain to me how in the world that felt. That's got to be one of the all-time, maybe the all-time greatest finish in college football. It's definitely top three, I would think. But, man, what a finish that was.
Stand back.
What do you say to the Auburn fans and the Auburn faithful that were there Saturday, coming off the loss of the Iron Bowl, being back at home, and the big Thanksgiving week, students gone from classes? I mean, what do you say to get them back here Saturday? What could be a really good game?
Well, you know, the Auburn faithful are they have persevered through a lot of things, and they show up. And you know, I've already apologized 100 times for the effort that we did not give them Saturday. And you know, this is not the first program in year one to have some tough losses like this. And I could go down the list and mention some, but you probably know who they are better than I. But we're in a rebuild. That's no excuse for what happened Saturday. But, man, we expect to give you the best of ourselves come Saturday in the Iron Bowl. And so we appreciate all the times you give us your best. And I know this Saturday will be no different for them.
Coach, you already mentioned about the run game from this past Saturday, but heading into this week, what is it going to take for you guys to get that going, especially going against an Alabama defensive front like how?
It's hard. You know, no one's running too much on that defensive front. We'll have a good plan, and our backs are good, and our tight ends are good, and our old line is competitive. But we do need to establish a run game. It will be no fun if you're having to drop back and throw every down. That won't work. 15 and 41 off the edge for them are both really, really good. So it's we need to stay balanced and make them have to at least honor the run game.
More back, John.
You coached against Nick Saban a number of times with your Ole Miss and had success against them. When you're game planning for Nick Saban coach team, what are some similarities that throughout the years his teams consistently do well?
Tackle, mix up coverages. Fronts haven't changed much. It's not a whole lot you can do with that. He's got a few more coverages that he runs now, but his teams are always physical and they're always going to tackle well. And you see that very vividly on these tapes also.
Jerry
Gill's
game plan. What was it, maybe just particularly on offense, that made it suitable to adjust once you kind of saw what they were doing defensively? Was it mostly time of possession? I guess some other factors.
Yeah, the time of possession killed our offense for sure, and the opportunities we had. But defensively, it's more missed tackles than we've had the last three games combined. We misaligned more times. The focus that we had, obviously, for the game plan was lacking. And, you know, that's – we didn't get it done. And it wasn't a whole lot of adjustments to do. They didn't do a whole lot. But, man, you got to give them credit when they did have a chance to make a throw in a tight window and make a catch in a tight window to convert a third down or a fourth down or a score. They made every single play. And so give them credit for that. But we tackled so poorly.
Coach, I know you said that you're giving a message on focus today. As you lead into the Iron Bowl, for you personally, what's going to be the marker that your team is progressing in the right way after you have these sessions?
Well, I don't think I'll know that until after Tuesday's practice. But Tuesday's practice needs to be physical. It needs to set the tone of what this game's going to be like. And you're going to get punched in the mouth in this game. And you better be ready to respond. And it's going to be a physical test of your will and of you physically also. And so Tuesday needs to, it can't be that totally, but it needs to set that tone.
Front row, Jason.
Yeah, I think 6 out of 7 possessions offensively face a 3rd and 10 or longer. Yep. Staying on schedule has been the focus all year. Is that ultra important come Saturday?
No, yeah, that game will get really difficult if we're not in some 3rd and manageables. It was just a nightmare of everything we've done pretty well the last few weeks, winning 1st down, not having penalties, taking care of the ball, All of those things were pretty non-existent Saturday, and we're going to be very strategic about our first and second down calls to try to get us in those third and manageable. I mean, their stats on third down are pretty dang good. I can't remember what they were, but they're in the top three or four in third downs. Yeah, that's it. We expect to have a plethora of great players here, and it will be our opportunity to present to them one last time before the season ends how great the atmosphere is at Auburn, how great our fans are, how great this atmosphere, this family, the Auburn family is to be a part of, and hopefully we can solidify, you know, all the ones who are currently committed and maybe swing a few others to say, man, I want to go help them build something there. I know they can. They have the resources. They have the support. We need some players to come join us.
Anything else? Got one more.
I think it speaks to the history, the people that have gone before us, fans and coaches and players who understood what this rivalry meant to so many, and they were willing to lay it on the line, and in particularly doing it here in Jordan-Hare, where, you know, our fans have been incredible, and I think they'll even be at another level come Saturday. And I think it just speaks to the love and passion that our people have for our program, and particularly when you're playing in this game.
There you have it. That's Hugh Freeze from his news conference held at around 11 o'clock this morning. And man, he still sounds, as he says, ticked off. We will respond to that with ABC 3340's Jeff Spiegel as Big Noon Sports continues.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Tuesday, 7:30. We'll visit with Kevin Skarbinski. We'll break down the Iron Bowl with Kevin. And in the 8 o'clock hour, we're actually going to do the Blue Plate Special on Wednesday this week. So we'll find out what games Coach is looking at.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as Roll Tide as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Football is back. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon, clouds increasing, the high 71. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms moving in. There could be a few strong storms around, the low 59. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy with rain ending during the morning, the high at 68. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 70 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Oh, lot to digest in our first hour here on Big Noon Sports with Lars and Matt. You heard from Nick Saban, and then you immediately heard from Hugh Freeze, who, quite honestly, still sounds like he's trying to shake off what happened Saturday at Jordan-Hare Stadium. To talk about that and all things Thanksgiving, Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340 is our guest. Jeff, how are you?
Really good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. This is our favorite holiday week, so, and it's also our favorite football game.
Yeah.
Everything's going on. All right, what is your favorite side dish at Thanksgiving?
Green bean casserole.
Okay.
That's very Southern of you to say.
Yes, it is.
What is it? Explain to me the majesty of the green bean casserole. I don't get it.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, it's just, the way my wife makes it is just, it's just unbelievable. It's just, I can't even like tell you what's all in it except for green beans, but it's just really good. And, I tell you though, it's really one of the few side dishes I like for Thanksgiving. No one has to fight me over cranberry sauce. No one has to fight me over squash casserole. No one is going to be worried about Jeff Spiegel taking the last piece of sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie, because I hate all of those things. And I'm basically, just give me turkey and let me sit in a corner and I'll be good. And my green bean casserole.
How about deviled eggs?
Deviled eggs are okay. Not too many of them, but, deviled eggs. I'm good with deviled eggs.
I'm a big dressings guy, but it has to have the perfect gravy mix, and it can't be real dry. But after that, I'm good with turkey and some deviled eggs and moving along. I am a big, big fat no to anything that has to do with the cranberry stuff. If that's what you like, that's great. Now,
sure.
What's our turkey this week, and I mean that in the good way, is the Alabama-Auburn game. And I don't know if you were able to read or even hear the postgame comments of Hugh Freeze following the loss Saturday, but even today, he still sounds like a down man. And it's difficult to get your team back up. Well, not for Alabama, but... to be very honest with you, Hugh, I hope you're listening. I think Hugh's got to shake this thing off before anybody else does.
Yeah. But look, I mean, part of it is Hugh Freeze has no idea how to beat a Jerry Kill coached football team. I mean, last year, New Mexico State, gave Liberty, I think, a loss. So I think Jerry Kill has kind of got Hugh Freeze's number. But listen, I mean, here's the thing. That team played so uninspired. Peyton Thorne got all kind of ticked off at his offensive lineman. No response from his offensive lineman at all. Couldn't reach his guys. The coaches couldn't reach the guys. It's like, you know what? They didn't want to be there. The crowd was not into it, because it's New Mexico State. I mean, there was no energy in that building at all. And it was just, I tell you when I knew things were going to go south for Auburn, and it happened in the first quarter, when their quarterback took Nehemiah Pritchett after he picked off one of his throws and not only tackled him, but body slammed him. That's when I knew Auburn was in a lot of trouble, because when the other team's quarterback sends a message like that and is not afraid to take a flag, for something like that, that shows the other team is tougher than you are. And what I was disappointed in, I was disappointed that a fight didn't ensue from that. I mean, Nehemiah's teammates should have gotten in there and just given that quarterback the what for. Look, if they get thrown out of the game, they get thrown out of the game. But that right there showed me that New Mexico State brought a lot more fight to the table than Auburn did, and I knew it was going to be downhill from that point on.
Do you think it's possible that New Mexico State becomes Hugh Freeze's Louisiana Monroe, right? The team that, if I remember correctly, that beat Alabama in 2007, Nick Saban's first year?
Well, I think the two games are different. Yeah. I think the two games are different. The coaches are different, first of all. Hugh Freeze, you know, doesn't come in with like a national championship on his resume. Number two, if I remember correctly, you guys may correct me if I'm wrong, but it wasn't a matter of Louisiana Monroe just lining up and whipping Alabama. It was a matter of Alabama making a lot of, you know, kind of boneheaded mistakes that kind of gave Louisiana Monroe the game. This is a game where New Mexico State lined up and look, I mean, you know, the Auburn folks can hang a Louisiana Monroe tag on it and shrug it off, you know, as lightly as that, say, well, this happens in the first year. This is a case where New Mexico State lined up and whipped Auburn, whipped them. It wasn't a matter of Auburn turning the ball over. Wasn't a matter of Auburn giving, you know, New Mexico State the game. It was a matter of the guys up front whipping the Auburn guys up front. And that's what it was. Now, you know, take your medicine and go on. But don't try to compare it to the Louisiana Monroe game in 2007. That's just not going to fly with me.
One of the things that I noticed, and by the way, I think everybody in college football is a big fan of Jerry Kill. If those of you don't remember, he's the one that had the seizure. I guess he was at Minnesota at the time and then really struggled to get back on the sideline. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very, very evident. This guy can coach. That team was prepared. Yeah. They were more than Auburn's equal. And
he's so good at motivating players.
Well, he motivated me watching it. And then, guys, I want to throw this out to the roundtable and get you, both of you, to respond. I don't think since they have changed the rules, particularly with the first down and not calling, you know, not stopping the clock, I don't think I've ever seen better clock management from about midway through the third quarter to the end of the game. They just didn't give Auburn the football back. And a quarterback that you mentioned earlier, he let it go to 3 and 2 seconds in the third quarter. They had already planned that they were going to walk out of there with a victory. And to Jerry Kill, the victory goes to spoils. Clock management speaks. That's what really impressed me in the second half.
Well, and they know, and they don't give you a lot of possessions. And that's the thing, you know, the further Auburn fell behind, you know, there was not going to be any coming back because you were basically out of possessions. And if you only get the football so many times in a football game, there are only so many points you can score. Now it's up to your defense to get those guys off the field, and Auburn couldn't do that. I think New Mexico State was 6 of 12, I think, in third downs or something like that. But, you know, they grind away the clock and they're just and like I said, I mean it the game was won at the line of scrimmage and New Mexico State, you know, hats off to them, man. I mean, they're having a dream season and they've earned it. I mean, there was nothing lucky about that football game at all. They came into another team's house and they just whipped them.
And I know we got to go to break, Matt, and I apologize for just jumping in here. Any big takeaways from Alabama's performance on Saturday other than the fact that they took care of business?
The only takeaway is that I think we've got a new punt returner, and I think Caleb Downs should be the guy. I mean, going forward. I mean, with that one kick return showed me he's got a lot of confidence. We knew that anyway from the way he plays DB. But Kool-Aid has just never looked comfortable back there. And that's something that, you know, could wind up costing Alabama an Iron Bowl, you know, if he makes a bad decision trying to return a punt. So I think they're going to go with Caleb Downs, you know, in this game. That would be my hunch anyway. They may give Kool-Aid another shot, but Kool-Aid has just never looked comfortable in that role from the get-go.
I got to say real quick that I was sitting in the end zone, the north end zone, just like 20 rows up. And so I had a really good view of the punts. And Downs did such an amazing job of sprinting, especially in the first half, of sprinting and just catching the ball, because he had a long way to go because they were doing everything in their power to keep the ball away from him. And the confidence and the sure-handedness that he displayed, Matt, was absolutely off the charts.
Well, and I think my thoughts on this will continue in a minute, but my thoughts are, in that atmosphere, Kool-Aid, wasn't he like top two in the nation last year? This is just what's so amazing about him this year. The first punt of the game, he stayed away from it, and there was nobody within 20 yards of him. Saban even mentioned that in his post-game comments. But I wonder, given the circumstances of the Tiger faithful at Jordan-Hare Stadium, it's going to be incredibly loud. We know that. And I wonder if Saban doesn't go back to McKinstry, although Caleb certainly earned his shot at it. Wow, what a return. I thought he messed up. He went backwards, and then he came on and went to the distance. So, anyway, that was good to see for Alabama. When we get back, Jeff Spiegel will stay with us, and we will continue to talk to him about the upcoming Alabama-Auburn game on Big Noon Sports.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
News in the NFL with the Jets making a change at quarterback. Reports say Tim Boyle will start in Zach Wilson's place on Friday when they visit the Dolphins. Boyle finished Sunday's loss to the Bills after Wilson was benched in the third quarter. Dolphins coach Mike McDaniel said running back Devon Achane may be able to play in that game despite re-injuring his knee on Sunday. McDaniel said he wouldn't rule him out, but he wouldn't rule him in either. Falcons coach Arthur Smith said Desmond Ridder will start at quarterback this week against the Saints. 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan confirmed safety Talanoa Hufanga tore his ACL in yesterday's win against the Buccaneers. And reports say the NFL is reviewing Broncos safety Kareem Jackson's hit on Vikings quarterback Josh Dobbs for potential discipline. No flag was thrown on the play, but Jackson just served a 2-game suspension for unnecessary roughness hits.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Happy early Thanksgiving. We've met at the locker room, and Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340, Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, myself, and we will continue our conversation now. Let's go, although I don't think we need to recap this in detail, Jeff, but any observations other than Caleb Downs following Alabama's 66-10 win over the Mocs?
Okay, one more thing. I did some quick research on that Alabama La Monroe game in 07. John Parker Wilson, 2 interceptions, Alabama, 2 fumbles. So they turned it over 4 times in that game. Yeah. So that further, you know, proves the point that you just can't compare the Auburn New Mexico State game to Alabama La Monroe. I think the thing about this Alabama football team that should scare Auburn fans to death is the fact that the stock continues to rise for this football team. They've just gotten better and better and better and better. And you say, well, how can you tell, you know, after they play Chattanooga and, you know, thump them 66-10 when you know, knew they were going to do that. This team has shown a knack in recent games of starting fast. Remember when the offense just really had a hard time getting it going? This offense now is like clicking from the get-go. And Milroe is just playing with such an incredible amount of confidence. And getting so many people involved. Jermaine Burton is back 100%. So this team hasn't even reached its peak yet, which is pretty scary going to an Iron Bowl. Having said that though, and having talked about how terrible Auburn was in their previous game, I've learned from watching this game for many, many years, what happened last Saturday has got nothing to do with this Saturday. Absolutely zero, nothing. And when that game kicks off in that stadium, especially, it's all bets are off. And I expect Auburn to bring an effort like they haven't brought all year. I expect to see the same team that clocked Arkansas. I expect them to Hugh Freeze kind of, you know, rally the troops and they're going to play their best football because, that's what Auburn does, in the Iron Bowl. Now there have been exceptions where Auburn's kind of tailing off toward the end of the year. And then, like, for example, when Alabama beat them 49-0, you know, where they've just kind of lost hope for the season. But more often times than not, you know, this is an incredible football game. And at Jordan-Hare Stadium, it seems to just be ratcheted up several notches.
This is nitpicking a little bit, but Milroe missed some wide open receivers. I mean, he still has trouble hitting that 10-yard sideline out. My sense is that is something that will be solved in the offseason, but that eventually could come back to really bite Alabama. And you can't miss those throws. Those are throws in the NFL that you hit 99 out of 100 times. And he still has that issue with that intermediate routes, I should say. I thought it was interesting in Saban's press conference that he just absolutely will not concede that weird things happen in Auburn when Alabama goes there. And, you know, he used to say, the best team always wins. Really? Did the best team win the kick six game? I mean, I'm sure, you know, as a coach, you don't want to say ahead of the game where you're going into a very hostile environment, like, no, weird things don't happen there. I mean, Jeff, just your take on Nick Saban, again, refusing to concede that, like, lightning strikes in that stadium for Auburn somehow, some way, so many times.
Well, by doing that, though, Lars, I mean, you yield to external factors. I mean, that's what you do. And you know how he feels about that. The motto with Alabama has always been, it's not about what they do, it's about what we do. You know, if we go in there and execute the way that we're supposed to, it shouldn't matter where we're playing. It shouldn't matter who we're playing. I mean, we should be able to win. So certainly he's not going to concede, you know, that strange things, you know, happen in that football stadium. Although strange things do. Now, 2 years ago, and again, here's another example that you can't take the immediate past and just, you know, predict anything with this football game. 2 years ago, this Auburn football team was in a mess. They collapsed in the second half against Mississippi State. Bo Nix got hurt. T.J. Finley started the South Carolina game. They shot themselves in the foot in that game, lost that game. So they lost three games in a row. They were 6-5, you know, going into this game 2 years ago. Alabama had Bryce Young, and everyone thought Alabama was just going to kind of walk all over them. Turns out Alabama had to fight for their lives to win that game, you know, in overtime. So it's just, you just can't take what happened in the recent past and predict anything. It's just, it's really hard to, especially when they're playing at Jordan-Hare.
You know, Jeff, I was talking with a group of people at the game, and the fact of the matter is there are only a select number of kick sixes, and then there was the Bruce Arians swing pass call at Auburn that may have cost Alabama, and then there was and then you go back to punt, Bama punt. The best team, 9 times out of 10, does win this game. Would you agree?
Yeah, the favorite usually wins this game. But that doesn't mean there's not any drama. And that doesn't mean you can't have a surprise every now and then. Like Trey Smith, I think, was it 2002 when Trey Smith had the big game for Auburn and they knocked off Alabama, I think. And then, I think 2001, it was, you know, Alabama kind of, you know, shocking Auburn a little bit. So, and it's just, there's so many crazy things that can happen in a rivalry game. And this is, you know, with all apologies to the Ohio State Michigan people, this is the best rivalry in college football. And it's just, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that can happen when you get all those emotions, you know, packed into this game, and the momentum swings can just happen in a heartbeat.
And what is Alabama's path to victory on Saturday?
Well, you know, you can't turn the ball over. You can't. You got to take the crowd out of the game. You got to kind of follow, you know, the New Mexico State plan of attack. You know, you got to get some drives going. You got to take control of the game early and kind of let the crowd know that, you know what, you're in for a long day. You know, if you want to rally your team to victory, you know, we're going to have something to say about that. And so taking control of the game and just kind of putting the foot on the gas early, getting off to a quick start, you know, is certainly a big factor. And, you know, you do have an Auburn football team that's kind of lacking a little bit of confidence. So don't give them anything to be confident about. You know, don't give up a Jarquez Hunter big 88-yard touchdown run. You know, don't let Peyton Thorne, you know, hit Javarius Johnson with a 75-yard pass. You know, don't make any mistakes that give Auburn any hope that their crowd can lift them to victory in this game.
Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340 is our guest. Both of you guys, how many players on Auburn's starting 22 plus special teams would start for Alabama? Jeff?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. I think Jarquez Hunter is a great football player.
Yeah.
I think Hunter could. I think Jalen Simpson is an amazing player. He could play on Alabama's defense. Jalen McLeod could play on Alabama's defense. Well, there are a lot of guys on that defensive side of the ball for Auburn that are really, really good football players. You know, it's the offense that's kind of had trouble finding their way. And in that three-game winning streak, they seem to have found their way. And then, you know, people kept telling me, but gosh, Jeff, I mean, they beat Vanderbilt. They beat Mississippi State. They beat Arkansas. And I go, I know, but did you see the way they beat Arkansas? They just clocked those guys. And so that's what was so shocking, you know, about the New Mexico State game. And it just, I'm still shaking my head about that thing. But they were 25.5-point favorites. So if you look at, like, largest upsets that I've ever seen, that's a 46.5-point swing, you know, and – it's just, wow. I just can't. I you know, when after the game, I said, they're going to have a hard time flushing that. They're going to have a hard time getting over that. But then I forgot, this is the Iron Bowl, and of course they're not going to have a hard time flushing that.
What's one player on Alabama's offensive side, other than the quarterback, that you're going to be paying close attention to on Saturday?
Jermaine Burton. I look for Jermaine Burton to have a really big game. But boy, in a game like this, he's got to keep his emotions in check. And that's been an issue for him all year. So if he can do that, keep his emotions in check, he's going to have a big day.
All right. You got lots of stuff to do. Do you have special Thanksgiving plans for ABC 33 Sports?
No. I mean, just, you know, stay away from the cranberry sauce. And just have a great week.
I hope you do as well with your family. Have a blessed week.
Thank you so much, Matt Lars. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Watch him nightly on ABC 33 Sports. He's an Alabama TV icon. Lars, we haven't talked about our experience of the game this past Saturday. We've got a couple other things to dive into as well as, guess what? Nobody bothered to help Alabama this weekend. Will they this Saturday? You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
The best.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
100.9 Tuscaloosa weather. A mild afternoon, clouds increasing, the high 71. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms moving in. There could be a few strong storms around, below 59. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy with rain ending during the morning, the high at 68. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 69 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, thank you all for listening. We appreciate Jeff Spiegel being with us. Of course, you've heard from Nick Saban and Hugh Freeze. The final 45 minutes or so of this show are going to belong to you. Your favorite Thanksgiving dish, your favorite Alabama-Auburn story, and what you think is going to happen this coming Saturday at 2:30 on CBS. So you can call us at 205-342-9904. 9904. So holler at us and we'll talk. In the meantime, Lars, Saturday's game was just postcard perfect for me. I didn't have to sit in the sun. You did. But Laura Lee Thompson and her husband Glenn invited me, and I went up to their level and just had an absolutely fabulous time. And I'll just share with you a little bit that, to, you know, come accustomed to watching it with my feet up on the ottoman. I got there early, like an hour early, just to watch the crowd filter in, to watch what the bands are doing, to watch the ceremony of the seniors, which was very interesting to see Nick Saban go from family to family and family and hand them the football that recognizes them as a Tide senior, and then to have the picture and briefly talk to all the family members. It was just a really, really cool thing. And I just had a wonderful time, again, thanks to Laura Lee and Glenn. But big time. I didn't have to, however, deal with three children under the age of 10, including twins at 6. Are they 7 now? What are they?
They're
what
6. They're 6.
Yeah. And then Lincoln's 8. I bet it helped to have room so they could run around a little bit, because in a packed LSU game, that would have been quite difficult.
Well, we actually didn't have that much. There really wasn't any room, but it was just for them. They've gone to some Alabama games, but they have never been that close to the field, and it was just a completely new experience for them. And frankly, you know, I don't want them watching from a luxury suite. I want them to watch the game the way other, you know, the rest of us watch it. And so this was a first experience for them, and we had so much fun. I mean, yes, there were tears. There were a lot of throwing, getting in popcorn fights, and the popcorn would land in other fans' laps, but everybody was good around us. And we just had so much fun. And the great thing was, probably the most enjoyable part was just the car ride home. and reviewing everything that we did, and they were just so excited about it. And this was the whole reason I embarked on what I jokingly referred to as a suicide mission, right? Taking my three little ones by myself to a massive sporting event. And even talking with April, she's like, I would never do that. Well, you know what? It's like, I'm just not going to sit in my house on a beautiful Saturday afternoon and just let them, you know, be on their iPads. No, we are going to go actually do something. And again, it was really about just creating a memory, a shared experience, and something that it just, even though the moment itself, it's over, it almost lives on in perpetuity because it will be this frame of reference, right, that we'll always have. And I know you have similar experiences with your kids when you took your kids when they were small to different sporting events.
Oh, it was awesome. And unless they were really, really young, they still remember them. And that's cool. And as a parent, that's what you're doing it for. Although you get a lot of self-satisfaction after, you know, when you watch them. One of the other things that I
just want to say real quick, and we took a picture, the picture is just so amazing. And I already am like turning it into like, you know, this like canvas, right? Like, by the way, Walgreens has an amazing sale going on. Like it's 60%. It's 60% off on 16 by 21 canvases. Normally, like, it'd be $80, and now it's $30. So, everyone listening, hey, flood Walgreens because there's a promotional code that you can get, and it goes through the 25th of November, and it's just absolutely a wonderful deal. But... and no, I did not get compensated to say that, but
well, you should.
Still that picture now, you know, again, that will be like a frame of reference for us. Right. And, I'm so glad we went. Sometimes doing the hard thing usually ends up being the right thing and the most fulfilling thing.
Well, you sent me a really, really great picture, and I'm glad y'all had a good time.
Yeah, and that's the actual picture. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. One of the other things that I noticed in pregame, as I said, was Saban's attention to the seniors. But then throughout the game, got information that Alabama dressed 134 players. They dressed every single scholarship, walk-on, and then some. Lars, let me run that number by you again. 134. At one point in the game, I looked at the far sideline. I said, I don't think the Mocs have enough to field two full teams. But what it was is that Alabama had so many, it made it look like Tennessee Chattanooga didn't. Although I think they only brought 62, which is a relatively low number. But then during the game, particularly, did you know that Milroe didn't even play in the second half? Good move, in my opinion. But as the game grew longer and Alabama's lead continued to grow, there was much concentration by the Alabama coaching staff to put guys in the game. And I'm not talking about twos and threes. I'm talking about seniors and walk-ons. And there are many that should be recognized, but the one, since we're right here, Lars, that I will give you is Sam Willoughby, 5-year walk-on at Alabama. 5 years. You're a walk-on. Now, I know walk-ons do get some privileges, but you don't get a scholarship. And to see him, and I believe I was listening to the postgame show on the way out, that he actually was put in and inserted on a kickoff. And can you imagine what that meant to that guy? He's a Vestavia guy. And he'll remember that forever. And he'll tell his grandkids, and his grandkids will tell their kids. And it's just a really cool thing. On senior day, and also a senior that has gotten more playing time and safety Story. He got a huge pick. He got a pick on senior day, his final game in a crimson uniform. And by the way, it was a spectacular interception as he managed to get his feet down going out of bounds. So all of those wonderful stories to the side of the 66-10 victory. Just that's the kind of stuff that warms your heart. And I'm sure there were quite a few other players that I needed to recognize as well. But those two popped into mind. When we get back, let's see if we can't get a few phone calls in. Our number is 342-9904, area code 205-342-9904. Give us a call and we'll talk about Alabama and Auburn. I mean, what else is there to talk about this week? Well, maybe we'll find a couple other things. This is Big Noon Sports.
Built to win.
Touchdown, Alabama!
Built for championships.
Throws intercepted, Alabama!
Built by Bama.
Alabama is still Alabama.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide battle Auburn in the 88th Iron Bowl in the season finale. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner too.
Hey, Crimson Tide.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, and Noah with you on this really pretty Monday afternoon. Folks, it's not going to be nice tonight, so make sure and keep your James Spann weather tuner near you, because tonight it is going to rain, and it's going to rain hard, and there is a threat of bad weather. So be aware. Don't want anything happening as we get into Thanksgiving. What a great holiday. Lars, we've known, I guess, since Alabama started picking it up and laying it down, maybe it was the Ole Miss game that we really thought that this team was starting to get more continuity and pull together and understand the Saban process. But I think ever since then, at that time, I think Alabama had dropped to like number 11 or 12. Been trying to see if Alabama can't get back closer to the top four, i.e. playoff. It's just not happening. And particularly over the last 3 weeks, it seems like there have been opportunities for some of these teams to drop. But I don't know how folks feel about Georgia beating Tennessee. Some feel like the Georgia win helps Alabama if they can beat them in the playoff or in the championship game. But Minnesota, no help. Ohio State thumped them 37-3. Now, the Terrapins tried and came close, but close, not good enough, as Michigan won 31-24. Florida State actually fell behind North Alabama 13-0, but then the Noles scored 58 in a row, so they won more than comfortably. The one that I was watching late, I'm sure you were too, was Oregon State, Washington, and the Huskies, number 5, barely survived the trip to Corvallis, and maybe that means something this weekend, but Washington won it 22-20. Here's the one that team that you, I don't think anybody wants to play them, and I don't think anybody wants to play Alabama, but the Ducks are flying high. They just walked all over Arizona State 49-13. Bo Nix, 404 yards and 6 TDs. I think he won the Heisman this past weekend. Lars, quick comment there.
I think he is on the cusp of it, and I also, it's going to come around most likely to the Pac-12 championship game. Not only will there be a possibility for each team to get into the college football playoffs, but I think Heisman Trophy's on the line, and between Penix and Bo Nix, and So that's going to be really interesting. And so now, Matt, does a one-loss Oregon team get in over a one-loss Alabama team? I don't think so. I really don't, especially if Alabama, Georgia's going to be number one, I'm assuming, in the rankings this week and moving forward until Alabama, plays them in the SEC championship game. And this is assuming that Alabama beats Auburn, which, I think we both believe they will. Let me just put that to you. If Oregon beats Washington in the Pac-12 championship game to redeem themselves for their one loss earlier in the season at Washington in Seattle in a very tough environment, and they outplayed Washington in that game, do they get in over Alabama?
It'd be very close. It'd be very close because an Oregon win at Washington is huge, but to knock off a team that hadn't lost in 3 years is pretty big too, and that's technically on a neutral site. I don't know. And right now, if I were voting, I'd put Alabama there just for the obvious reasons of the SEC. No. And I think people forget how difficult they go. Well, Alabama won this. Alabama's schedule was much more difficult. Of course, yes. The SEC is more difficult.
Yes.
So I think that maybe that's the one statistic that may come into play that helps Alabama.
But yeah.
You'd rather.
I mean, the bigger question could be, and it depends on how other things shake out, and it depends on how the SEC championship game goes. Does a one-loss Oregon team get in over a one-loss Georgia team?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that
I think they probably would.
I was kind of pulling for Tennessee. I know people said that wasn't the right thing to do as far as Alabama's concerned. My opinion as of the middle of last week was anybody that can lose in front of Alabama is good news for the Crimson Tide. So, but that didn't happen. I mean, did Georgia look pretty good or what?
Yeah. Here is, and I hate injuries. I hate injuries, even if they're, they occur on a team that you don't support or that you actively, dislike. And I'm not saying I actively dislike Florida State, but I hated to see what happened to Florida State quarterback Jordan Travis, going down out for the year. Basically looks like he's going to be moving on to the NFL. At one point, he really was in the serious conversation of the Heisman Trophy. And so now you have Florida State going to a backup quarterback. And by the way, North Alabama, they came out against Florida State and they were up 13-0.
That's correct.
Right out of the gate. And we're like, oh, well, this is a little interesting. But then Florida State scored 58 unanswered to finish the game. But now, so Florida State, they're 11-0 for the first time since 2014. And they're going with a redshirt junior quarterback named Tate Rodemaker. And he's going to be the guy for the rest of the season. And before being thrust into the lineup on Saturday, he'd only thrown 8 passes. And while he finished 13-23 for 217 and 2 touchdowns against, again, North Alabama team that was completely overmatched. So, and now you got Florida going into the swamp in a huge rivalry game. And the thing is, I mean, Florida State, they have the 7th best offense in the FBS, and in scoring. They're averaging 40 points a game. So Alabama fans be rooting for Florida big time, because if Florida gets knocked out, if Florida State gets knocked out, that absolutely opens up a couple different avenues for Alabama to get in, because a one-loss Florida State team is not going to get in over a one-loss Alabama team.
No, not going to happen at all. It's just not going to happen. But I've seen enough of Florida to think that even without Jordan Travis, that the Seminoles will win that, even though it's in Gainesville, tough place to play. But I think Florida State, just player for player, is better than Florida. And that's going to be the result.
You just never know, though, with a backup quarterback who doesn't have much experience. I mean, it's a whole new ball game for Florida State. And now, and how does the committee judge this, right? Because you go back to 2014, and you had the top two quarterbacks for Ohio State go down. And then Cardell Jones comes in out of nowhere, and Ohio State then thrashes Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. And then Ohio State would go on to beat Alabama. Remember Ezekiel Elliott?
Ezekiel Elliott.
He's still running.
Yeah.
He's still running.
Alabama did not tackle that man.
No, no. Ezekiel Elliott made so much money against Alabama. It's unbelievable. So it'll be interesting. Like, how much does Florida State get penalized because of an injury? And it's absolutely not fair, but I think the committee, they factor that in. And, I don't think it will necessarily impact Alabama if they end up winning out, but it could end up impacting Washington, and whether or not a one-loss Washington could jump a no-loss Florida State team. I don't know. I'm kind of talking in circles here, but there's just so many permutations and possibilities, and we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. Right. And I guess if you're Alabama, you just got to take care of business.
It's all you can
on Saturday, and then just have the best performance of the year against Georgia. And yeah, technically it's a neutral site game, but you know, what do you when Alabama has played Georgia in the past in Atlanta? Has it been about a 50-50 split? Because that's how the tickets should, in theory, be split up, right, Matt?
Yeah, so, I think so.
So it wouldn't necessarily be a de facto home game for Georgia.
No, I don't think so, because Alabama's buying up tickets, and they have been since it was determined that, you know, East versus West is Georgia versus Alabama. I don't think so, and I've been over there, and I didn't think so then either. But I do know one thing. These games have always been fantastic. I mean, and of course, the national championship game was different. But you remember the one about 10 years ago where Georgia threw to a tight end with just a few seconds left and Alabama made the tackle down around the 10-yard line? Otherwise, mm-hmm. Georgia was going in to win the football game. They've all been pretty darn good football
They've
games.
They've all been good. I mean, I think, was that Aaron Murray who threw that pass? Yeah, that was, they've been just neck and neck. And by the way, Georgia, this is a team that is absolutely hitting on all cylinders. Their quarterback is playing with so much confidence. He's a different player than he was just a month ago. And getting, Brock Bowers back and this is what you want if you're Alabama, though. This is what you want. You want Georgia to be impressing the hell out of everybody in the country. And then if Alabama can go in, probably being about a 4 or 5 point underdog and, beat Georgia, it would be really hard to keep Alabama out. It would be really hard.
And once again, a final team that's ahead of Alabama, Texas, defeated Iowa State 26-16. I don't know if you saw the beginning of the game. Golly, what awful weather. Rainy, it was windy, it was cold as heck. Texas prevailed. That's a big road win, and it's tough to play the Cyclones at home, but Texas prevailed, and they are still ahead of Alabama. But
still, it was just a 10-point win. I mean,
yep.
I go back, like, who would be favored right now if those two teams met on a neutral field? Alabama by maybe 10?
Really? Over Texas?
Yes.
Wow. I would have thought 3. But anyway.
I could be wrong. I'll do some research. I'll call my bookies here.
Call your bookies and find out. All right. When we get back, I want to talk about one of the more amazing statistics that I've seen in college football in a long, long time. Kind of blew me away. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A mild afternoon, clouds increasing, the high 71. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms moving in. There could be a few strong storms around, the low 59. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy with rain ending during the morning, the high at 68. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 69 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Back on the show, Lars and Matt. Appreciate you folks dialing us in. We'll be here the first couple of 3 days of the week, and I hope that it glides you into a wonderful Thanksgiving. Again, a footnote here, but an important one. Keep an eye on the weather early evening through tomorrow morning. All right? It could get bad. So this part of the country in Alabama, we keep a good lookout. Just keep James Spann on your speed dial. Actually, just keep
Matt, I just texted my guy, my Vegas guy, and he said on a neutral field, Alabama would be a 10-point favorite against Texas. So, right now.
Wow. I would probably take Texas, but I don't know. We'll see.
Have you been watching Texas?
Very surprised. Texas has not lost, right, to anybody but Oklahoma. I've been watching them. But, yeah, I don't think it's 10 points. But, you know, we agree to disagree. There is a team that has put up some numbers this year that just boggle my mind. This is a Power 5 team, okay? They have the 7th best defense in the nation. They only give up 12.4 points per game. Meanwhile, they have the worst of 133 FBS teams in offense. They only score 18.5 points per game. Yet, Lars, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Probably Iowa or Nebraska. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Well, here's the one that separates those two. The Hawkeyes are 9-2.
Yeah.
They have the worst offense in America, and they're 9-2. I don't believe I've ever heard anything like that.
Yeah, it is an incredibly crazy stat. And thank you for allowing me to mention Nebraska at the on the last segment. Didn't know if I was going to be able to get it in there and keep the streak going at 794 straight shows where I mentioned Nebraska. It'll be interesting to see Nebraska play in Iowa this week. And Nebraska needs the win to become bowl eligible. Hawkeyes will end up playing the winner of Michigan and Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. And no one on God's green gives Iowa a chance to win that game. So basically the winner of Ohio State, Michigan, I think you can pencil them in. This Iowa team is crazy, right? I mean, they their offense is so bad that the father, Kirk Ferentz, fired his son, who was the offensive coordinator.
And they kept winning.
And they kept winning.
And no, the offense didn't get better.
And the thing is, but they got the best punter in the country. I mean, this guy is just the Thunderfoot. He will launch it. And he's not only just does he have a massively powerful leg, he can angle the ball, and I'm pretty sure he leads the country by a good distance in punting. And he could be the rare punter who gets drafted, you know, like fourth round. But so that's how Iowa wins, with defense and offense that absolutely can't do anything other than it's a victory for them if they don't turn the ball over, and an amazingly aggressive, strong, athletic, disciplined defense.
Lars, you brought up Nebraska, so I have to ask you a question since you are a native and a big fan, okay? You know, states have everything from a state flower to a state song to a state bird, you know? We're the Yellowhammer. But I was goofing around Saturday night playing some trivia online. Love to do that stuff. I didn't know this, but some states actually have a state soft drink. Now, in places like, you know, Georgia, I can understand that. It'd be Coca-Cola. It's, you know, that's where it was formed and made, right there in Atlanta. But I found this very interesting, and I actually made a note and sent an email to myself to remind me to ask you, do you know what the official, and it said soft drink, of Nebraska is?
Oh, man.
And look, not getting this is no shame, okay? Because it's not really even a soft drink. That's what made it even funnier. And let me also say,
wait, can you give me another clue?
It's not really a soft drink. and I have another great one. You ready? This will give it away, but it's a good way to give it away. This drink also plays cornerback for Alabama.
So, yeah, we like our Kool-Aid. Yeah, we love Kool-Aid.
Did you drink it a lot when you were a kid? Did you drink Kool-Aid a lot?
I, from the age of maybe 2 to 10, had a permanent red Kool-Aid mustache.
Really?
And it's so funny. My Autumn, who is the spitting image of me in every single way, and including like how she looks just like me, which is frightening, and she acts just like me, which is even more frightening. But she always has she's always got food over on her face, right? And she likes Kool-Aid, and she has the Kool-Aid mustache. She's rocking the Kool-Aid mustache all the time.
And now we have a mustache. It's just purple. And that's not for grape, and I am kidding so much. But I remember, do you remember taking Kool-Aid and putting it in an ice tray?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and you put
toothpicks in it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess what I found out here is that maybe it is the official drink of Nebraska. And, of course, you had to go Big Red, right?
Yeah, and as the official adult beverage at Nebraska is red beer, and that's tomato juice and beer.
I still don't know. I could try it.
We'll try it. Like, yeah, just like Coors Light and tomato juice.
My homework for tomorrow is to find out what the official soft drink or soda, whatever, for Alabama is. I'll have that information for you tomorrow, and I'm sure that will hold all our listeners for 22 hours.
Yeah.
Lars, let's do it again. Thanks, Noah.
Let's do it again. Thanks, Noah.
It's back. The Captain.